Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast, episode 92, The Baiano Wars. Before starting this episode, I thought I would quickly mention that I have started putting the podcast up on YouTube. I will be slowly releasing the back catalogue there, and when I've caught up, all new episodes will be uploaded at the same time as they go onto this podcast feed. There will be audio, just the same as here, so you won't be missing anything by continuing to listen to the episodes as normal. If you prefer using that platform, however, well, now you can listen to the podcast there. In the last narrative episode, we told the story of Miguel de Berea's slave rebellion in Venezuela and the brief independent kingdom he established there. Almost simultaneously, the dates of both are rough. Another similar story was taking place around the Caribbean coast in Panama. In many ways, this story is similar to that of Miguel de Berea's, but it was perhaps more successful. This is perhaps surprising, considering that Panama was much more established a colony compared to Venezuela. We looked at the beginnings of Spain's Panama colony during the episodes on Balboa. In those, we looked at his exploration and conquest of the territory, and his political battles with Dávila, the man who would beat him and end up in control of the colony. We also touched on the area when we looked at the conquest of the rest of Central America, towards the end of the conquest of Mexico, and the conflict over who would control the area, those coming up from Panama, or those sweeping south from Mexico. After the Caribbean islands, Hispaniola, Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Jamaica, Panama was one of Spain's oldest colonies, and a launch pad from which other conquests were launched. Many conquistadors passed through the colony, and Pizarro's invasion of Peru had its origins there. Since we looked at Panama's establishment under Balboa and Dávila, the colony had grown. Spaniards had arrived, mainly from Andalusia and Extremadura, and although non-Spaniards were officially prohibited from settling in the colony, except for those I will mention in a second, people came from Portugal, France, Germany, and England. It was not completely a story of growth, however. Many colonists moved away to Nicaragua and especially Peru once these places had been conquered. They judged that their opportunities were better in those places. The usual story played out in Panama. The encomienda system was established, but the indigenous population was not large enough to sustain it. Part of the reason for this was that disease greatly affected that population. The church arrived and began converting the indigenous people as well. When Peru was conquered and riches started to flow out of it, Dávila established a network of roads between Panama City on the Pacific and Nombre de Dios on the Caribbean. This enabled the colony to grow rich as wealth, silver, and goods flowed across it on their way to and from Spain. You might remember how a couple of German banking families had obtained the right to colonize Venezuela. Something sort of similar had happened in Panama, although on a smaller scale. Spain still controlled the colony, but soon after Panama City had been founded and made the capital, representatives of the Italian Republic of Genoa became extremely powerful there, and their non-official power rivaled that of the official government. Like the rest of the empire, Panama was a destination to which enslaved people were brought in order to build the colony and its economy. Genoese interest in Panama City was primarily because of the wealth they could gain from controlling the flow of slaves into the colony through its capital. Genoa was a city-state based on commerce, and it had owned colonies and trading posts all over the Mediterranean. They had obtained the right from the Spanish king to operate a monopoly on the importation of slaves into Panama. Of course, to those slaves, it didn't matter much what the nationality of those in charge was. They just wanted to win their freedom. A small number of Africans accompanied Balboa, and I have read that they were actually free. One Spanish chronicler also says that when the Spanish arrived in Panama for the first time, they found there was already a group living there. This seems strange, and I haven't seen it written anywhere else. I don't really know how to judge the truth of this. If it was true, I suppose the most likely explanation was that they had escaped from the Caribbean islands and made their way there. Soon the enslaved population vastly outnumbered the European one. They began escaping captivity immediately and establishing small palenques in areas unsettled by the Spanish. In fact, Panama will become perhaps the most rebellious part of the Spanish Empire, with higher numbers escaping here than anywhere else during the 16th century. Presumably, most managed to slip away quietly. But the first known slave revolt here happened in 1525, when a group rose up in Panama City, and once they'd reached the countryside, began attacking outlying farms. This was defeated, but it was only the first of many. In 1530, in a precursor to Miguel de Berea's revolt, those made to work in mines at Acla rose up and were free for 2 years. In 1549, a slave named Filipillo, who had been put in charge of a pearling ship, did the same, establishing an African settlement, which also lasted 2 years. When I researched and wrote the episode on Miguel, his settlement was often referred to as the first free settlement in the Americas, and so I took that to be true. Researching this episode, I now realize that it wasn't. These stories predate Miguel, and slave rebellion seems to have been much more widespread than I realized. As with Miguel's story, facts and details can be hard to find. Most of this episode is based on an article written by the historian Ruth Pike, whose work pretty much makes it possible, as I don't think I would have been able to find enough information for a full episode without it. It doesn't appear to be known where Baiano, the man who would become by far the most successful slave leader, originally came from. I've read that he was Yoruban, and so would have had his origins in what is today Nigeria. One source says that he may have had high social status in Africa before captivity, which would have been part of the reason he was able to establish himself as a leader. The same source also says that he spoke good Spanish and had adopted many Spanish habits, which would suggest that he'd been within the empire for a long time. We don't know how old he was, or anything much else about his early life. The various scattered palenques of the Caribbean side of Panama were isolated from each other and small scale. Whatever the events which led him to that place, free of Spanish control, Baiano managed to unite these palenques into one unified force. He established himself as a king and ruled over a population of about 1,200. Like Miguel de Berea, he appointed a bishop, and a Spanish writer says that they followed a version of Christianity. This next information is from Wikipedia, so I can't be completely sure of its source and accuracy, but apparently they established a mosque as well. By this point, Islam had long been a major force in West Africa, as well as in other parts of the continent, so a decent number of those taken from there would have been Muslim. His settlement, named Ronconcholon, was well designed. It was hidden in the jungle, and the Spanish were unable to find it for years. Even if they had, it had been carved into a hilltop, with two roads leading to the walls and gates which prevented access. From here, Baiano and his men emerged to attack Spanish colonists, travellers, and settlements. Baiano began his free state in 1552, and over the next 4 years, the authorities made three attempts to find and defeat him. The first two were completely unsuccessful, but the third, led by the man who had defeated Filipillo, managed to surprise Baiano and capture him. It seems he only had with him a small force, and so the bulk of the palenque's population was still safe in their settlement. And obviously, its location was still unknown, so although their leader was captured, the rebellion was still far from over. Apparently, Panama was relatively undefended. It had no large indigenous population who posed a serious threat of rebellion, and while its role in the empire as a transit point for trade was economically beneficial, it also meant that much of its European population was comprised of traders rather than soldiers. The governor decided that the best course of action was to pardon Baiano and free him, presumably in return for a promise to stop attacking the colony, and because he lacked the resources to complete a military campaign. This was a mistake. Baiano went home and continued his raids. Things continued like this, in a state of low-level insurgency, for another year or two. In 1556, a Spanish commander happened to pass through Panama with the beginning of an army on his way to Peru, where he was about to take up the position of viceroy. When he was told about the situation, he decided to make it his business to sort things out. He successfully petitioned the king for funding, using half of the money to build a fortress and the other half to recruit more soldiers to attack Baiano. This proved difficult. The population of Panama had come to believe that Baiano was unbeatable, and so very few agreed to sign up. In the end, they went into the prisons, offering freedom in return for military service. Baiano's men attacked a caravan, transporting a large amount of expensive clothing, but they were unable to carry it all off at once. When they came back to collect the stuff they'd left behind, the Spanish had organized an ambush. It was the first major victory they managed to achieve against the Palenque since Baiano had been released. One man was captured, and they used him as a guide. They sailed along the coast and then went inland to the Palenque, but realized that it was too well defended to successfully attack. The Spanish commander set up camp and came up with a plan. He ordered that gifts be brought, as he intended to use them to trick Baiano. He also requested some kind of poison. When these arrived, he sent Baiano a message of friendship and invited him for a feast at their camp. He gave him the gifts and told them that they had a proposal. The Spanish would stay in their part of Panama, but Baiano's kingdom would be officially recognized and left in peace. When the food and wine was brought out, the poison was added, as the Spanish leader had no intention of implementing the deal. His plan was to end the rebellion there and then. The poison didn't work, however, and so late into the night, Baiano and his commanders were invited back to the commander's tent to continue partying. Here they gave the poison another go. This time it started working, but not as it was supposed to. Perhaps combined with the amount of wine they drank, Baiano and his commanders started to pass out, but they didn't die. They were captured instead, and the Spanish took control of the Palenque, although many of its population managed to escape further into the jungle. The Spanish and those they had captured stayed at the Palenque for 2 months. They made another proposal. If Baiano called his people back and told them not to continue the rebellion, they would be allowed to found a small autonomous settlement within the colony. Probably due to his weak position, Baiano agreed to this. It seems unlikely that he believed it, but he didn't have much option. Of course, there would be no such settlement. Everyone was brought back to Panama City and re-enslaved. They were not returned to their original owners, but instead, to make back some of the money which had gone into the campaign, they were sold by the crown. There was also a deliberate effort to disperse them across the empire, so that they couldn't collaborate with each other and rebel again. Baiano's kingdom ended there, although a few did manage to evade capture and continued living somewhere in the region, being joined by a trickle of new escapees. As in Venezuela, the slave rebellions, uprisings, and palenques would continue across the coming centuries. The population of free slaves living in independent communities actually increased over the next few decades. They were, however, once again isolated from each other in separate settlements, with their own leaders and without the capacity to coordinate as they had under Baiano. One of the most powerful was just 50 miles east of Panama City. They continued to raid where they could, and they were sometimes helped by French and English pirates, who were always happy to undermine the Spanish, or to trade goods for information which they could use for their own raids. Around the beginning of the 1600s, the Palenques in Panama, while still existing, became less powerful and numerous, and so the 1500s was their height. I don't want to jump too far ahead today, but I hope to do another episode at some point if I can find enough material. The later part of the 1500s, which it would cover, was heavily influenced by those pirates, and even Francis Drake, the famous English privateer. So I also feel it might make more sense to tell them once we've started to cover those parts of Latin America's history. The rest of Baiano's life was probably as good as it could have been, given his circumstances. He was taken to Spain, and he lived there until he died of natural causes. He was definitely a sort of prisoner, but going on the sparse sources we have, it doesn't sound like he was in jail. Today a river in the area where he established his palenque is named after him. Next episode, we will start a series on Pedro de Valdivia and his conquest of Chile. If you've enjoyed this episode and you're feeling generous, leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts is something which is extremely helpful. It helps new people discover the show. If you've really, really enjoyed it and you're feeling especially generous, it is possible to leave a small donation. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's already done this. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelt MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @historylatinam, and if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.